With me. Chris nodded. Yeah? A little? Good. Now imagine that the human body is a gigantic ocean liner, and that all of your brain cells are the crew. Now one of these crew cells is up on the bridge, okay? He's the captain. But he never knows precisely what the rest of the crew below decks is doing. All he knows is that the ship keeps running smoothly and the job's getting done. Now the captain is you. I mean, it's your waking consciousness. And what happens in dual personality, I mean, maybe, is that one of those crew cells down below decks comes up on the bridge and takes over command of the ship. In other words, mutiny. Does that help you understand it? Chris was staring in unblinking incredulity. Father, that's so far out of sight that I think it's almost easier to believe in the fucking devil. Well, I don't know about all of these theories and stuff, Chris overrode him in a low, intense voice. But I want to tell you something, Father. You show me Reagan's identical twin. Same face, same voice, same smell, same everything down to the way she dots her eyes. And still I'd know in a second that it wasn't really her. I just know it. I'd know it in my gut. And I'm telling you, that thing upstairs is not my daughter. Now you tell me what to do, she said, her voice slowly rising and quivering with tightly held emotion. You tell me that you know for a fact there's nothing wrong with my daughter except in her head, that you know for a fact that she doesn't need an exorcism, and that you're absolutely sure it wouldn't help her. You go ahead. You tell me that, Father. You tell me that! At the end, it was a scream. Karis looked aside, and for long, pensive seconds, he was still. Then he turned a probing glance back to Chris. In the normal state, does she have a low-pitched voice? He asked her quietly. I mean normally. No, in fact, I'd say it's very light. Would you consider her precocious? Not at all. Her IQ? Above average. Reading habits. Nancy Drew and comic books mostly. And her style of speech right now. How much different would you say it is from normal? Well, completely. She's never used half of those words. No, I don't mean the content of a speech. I mean the style. The style. The way she puts words together. Chris's eyebrows lowered. Sorry, I'm still not really sure what you mean. Do you have any letters she's written, compositions? Recording of her voice, of course. Yes, there is a tape of her talking to her father. She was making it to send him as a letter, but she never got it finished. You want it? Yes, I do. And I'll also need her medical records, especially the file from Barringer. Chris looked aside and shook her head. Oh, Father, I've been that rude, and yes, I know. I really have to see the records for myself. So you're still against an exorcism? No, I'm only against the chance of doing your daughter more harm than good. But you're talking now strictly as a psychiatrist, right? No, I'm talking now also as a priest. If I go to the chancery office, or wherever it is I have to go to get permission for an exorcism, the first thing I'd have to have is a pretty substantial indication that your daughter's condition isn't a purely psychiatric problem, plus evidence that the church would accept as signs of possession. Well, like what? I don't know. Have to just go and look it up. Are you kidding me? I thought you were supposed to be an expert. There aren't any experts. You probably know more about demonic possession right now than most priests. Now, listen, let's get serious. How soon can you get those Barringer records? I'll charter a plane, Father, if I have to. And that tape? Chris stood up. I'll go see if I can find it. Oh, and just one other thing. Yeah, what? That book you mentioned with the section on possession. You think you can remember now if Reagan might have read it prior to the onset of the illness? Looking down, Chris concentrated. Gee, I seem to remember her reading something the day before before the trouble really started. But I can't be sure. But she did read it, I think. I mean, I'm sure. I'm pretty sure. I'd like to see it. Chris started away. Sure, I'll get it for you, Father. And the tape, it's in the basement, I think. I'll go and look. Karis nodded absently, staring at a pattern in an oriental area rug. And then after many minutes, he got up and walked slowly to the entry hall where, with his hands in the pockets of his trousers, he stood motionless in the darkness, as if in some other dimension, as he listened to the grunting of a pig from upstairs, then the yelping of a jackal, and then hiccuping, and snake-like hissing. Oh, you're there. I went looking for you in the study. Karis turned to see Chris flicking on the entry hall lights. Are you leaving, Father? She asked, as she came forward with the witchcraft book and Reagan's tape-recorded letter to her father. I'm afraid I've got to. I've got a lecture to prepare for tomorrow. Really, where? At the med school, Karis answered, accepting the book and the tape from Chris's hands. I'll try to get here sometime tomorrow morning or evening. In the meantime, if anything urgent develops, you be sure you call me, no matter what time. I'll leave word at the switchboard to let you ring through, okay? Now listen, how will you fix the medication? We're okay with there. They're all on refillable prescriptions. You won't call your doctor in again? The actress lowered her head. I can't, she said barely above a whisper. I just can't. You know I'm not a GP, Karis cautioned her. I know. It's okay. Chris still hadn't looked up, and Karis studied her intently and with concern. He could almost hear her anxiety pulsing and throbbing. Well, now, sooner or later, he said to her gently, I'm going to have to tell one of my superiors what I'm up to, most especially if I'm going to be coming by here at various unusual hours of the night. Chris looked up at him, worriedly frowning. Do you have to? I mean, tell them? Well, if I don't you think it might look a bit odd? Chris looked down again, nodding. Oh, yeah. I see what you mean. Do you mind? I'll tell them only what I have to. And don't worry, it's not going to get around. Chris lifted a helpless, tormented face to the strong, sad eyes, saw the strength, saw the pain. Okay, she said weakly. She trusted the pain. We'll be talking, Karis told her. He started outside, but then hung in the doorway, head down with the back of a fist to his lips as if thinking. And then he looked up at Chris. Did your daughter know a priest was coming over here tonight? No, nobody knew but me. Did you know that my mother had died just recently? Yes, I'm very sorry. Is Reagan aware of it? Why? Is she aware of it? No, not at all. Why do you ask? Karis shrugged. It's not important, he said. I just wondered. He examined Chris's features with a faint look of worry. Are you getting any sleep? Oh, well, some. Get pills then, Chris. Are you taking any Librium? Yes. How much? 10 milligrams twice a day? Make it 20. In the meantime, try to keep away from your daughter. The more you're exposed to her present behavior, the greater the chance of some permanent damage being done to your feelings about her. Stay clear, please, and slow down. You'd be no help to Reagan with a nervous breakdown. Her head and eyes lowered. Chris nodded despondently. Now go to bed, Karis told her. Will you please go to bed right now? Yeah, okay, Chris said softly. I promise. She looked up at him with warmth and the trace of a smile. Good night, Father Karis. And thanks. Thanks so much. For a moment, Karis studied her clinically again, then said, okay now. Good night. And then turning, he moved quickly away. Chris stood watching from the doorway. As he crossed the street, it occurred to her that he'd probably missed his dinner, and then she worried that he might be cold. He was rolling his shirt sleeve down. As he passed the 1789 restaurant, he dropped something, possibly the witchcraft book or the tape of Reagan's voice. He stooped to retrieve it, and at the corner of 36th Street and P, he turned left and vanished from her sight. Chris abruptly was aware of a feeling of lightness. She didn't see Kinderman sitting alone in an unmarked car. Half an hour later, Damien Karis hurried back to his room in the Jesuit residence hall with a number of books and periodicals taken from the shelves of the Georgetown campus library. Hastily, he dumped them on top of his desk and then rummaged through drawers for a package of cigarettes, and then, finding a half-empty pack of stale Camels, he lit one, drew on it deeply, and held the smoke in his lungs as his mind went to Reagan. Hysteria, he thought, that had to be it. He exhaled the smoke, hooked his thumbs in his belt, and looked down at the books. He had Osterreich's Possession, Huxley's The Devils of Loudun, Parapraxis in the Heisman case of Sigmund Freud, McCaslin's Demon Possession and Exorcism in Early Christianity in the Light of Modern Views of Mental Illness, and extracts from psychiatric journals of Freud's A Neurosis of Demoniacal Possession in the 17th Century, and finally, The Demonology of Modern Psychiatry.
Could you help an old altar boy, Father?
The Jesuit felt at his brow and then looked at sticky sweat on his fingers. Then he noticed that he'd left his door open. He crossed the room and closed it, and then went to a shelf for his red-bound copy of The Roman Ritual, a compendium of rites and prayers. Clamping the cigarette between his lips, he squinted through smoke as he turned to the general rules for exorcists, looking for the signs of demonic possession. He first skimmed it, and then started to read more slowly. The exorcist should not believe too readily that a person is possessed by an evil spirit, but he ought to ascertain the signs by which a person possessed can be distinguished from one who is suffering from some illness, especially one of a psychological nature. Signs of possession may be the following: ability to speak with some facility in a strange language, or to understand it when spoken by another, the faculty of divulging future and hidden events, display of powers which are beyond the subject's age and natural condition, and various other conditions which, when taken together as a whole, build up the evidence. For a time, Karis pondered. Then he leaned against the bookshelf and read the remainder of the instructions. When he had finished, he found himself glancing back up at instruction number 8. Some reveal a crime which has been committed. A light knocking at the door. Damien? Karis looked up and said, come on in. It was Dyer. Hey, Chris McNeil has been trying to reach you, he said as he entered the room. Did she ever get hold of you? When, you mean, tonight? No, this early afternoon. Oh, yeah, Joe, thanks, yes, I spoke to her. Oh, good, I just wanted to be sure you got the message. The pixie-ish priest was prowling the room as if searching for something. What do you need, Joe? Karis asked. Got any lemon drops, Damien? I've looked all through the hall, but nobody's got any, and man, do I crave one, maybe two, Dyer broodingly uttered, still prowling. You know, I once spent a year hearing children's confessions, and I wound up a lemon-drop junkie. The little shitheads keep breathing it on you along with all that pot. Between the two, I've come to think it's addictive. Dyer lifted the lid of a pipe tobacco humidor, half-filled with pistachio nuts. What are these, he asked. Dead Mexican jumping beans? Karras turned to his bookshelves, looking for a title. Listen, Joe, I'm sort of busy right now. Hey, isn't that Chris really nice, interrupted Dyer, flopping down on Karras's cot and stretching out full length with his hands clasped comfortably behind his head. Neat lady. Have you met her? I mean, you know, seen her in person? We've talked, answered Karras, as he plucked out a green-bound volume titled Satan, a collection of articles and Catholic position papers by various French theologians. He carried it back with him toward his desk. Now then, plain, you know, down to earth, unaffected, Dyer ruminated obliviously while staring up at the room's high ceiling. She can help us with my plan for when we both quit the priesthood, Dimmy. Karras looked at Dyer sharply. Who's quitting the priesthood? Gays, in droves. Basic black has gone out. Karras shook his head in bemused disapproval as he set down the books on his desk. Hey, come on, Joe, Karras chided him. Take her to some lounge act in Vegas, will you? Come on, scoot. Got a lecture to prepare for tomorrow. No, wait now. First we go to Chris McNeil, the young priest persisted, with this notion that I've got for a screenplay based on the life of St. Ignatius Loyola that for now I'm calling Brave Jesuits Marching. Tamping out his cigarette in an ashtray, Karras lifted his head to Dyer with a scowl. Would you get your ass out of here, Joe? I've got some heavy work to do. So who's stopping you? You. Karras had started to unbutton his shirt. I'm going to jump in the shower now, and when I come back in here, I expect you to be gone, Joe. Oh, well, grumbled Dyer reluctantly as he rose and swung his legs around so that he was sitting on the side of the bed. I didn't see you at dinner, by the way. Where'd you eat? I didn't. That's foolish. Why diet when you wear only frocks? Is there a tape recorder here in the hall, Joe? There isn't even a lemon drop here in the hall. Use the language lab. Who's got a key, Joe? Father President? No, Father Janitor. You need it for tonight? Yes, I do, Karras answered as he draped his shirt on the back of his desk chair. Where do I find him? Want me to get it for you, Damien? Oh, would you, Joe? I'm really in a bind. Dyer stood up. No sweat? Karras showered and then dressed in a t-shirt and trousers. Sitting down at his desk, he discovered a carton of Camel non-filters, and beside it a key that was labeled Language Lab, and another tagged Refectory Refrigerator. Appended to the latter was a note. Better you than the rats and Dominican cat burglars. Karras smiled at the signature. The Lemon Drop Kid. He put the note aside, then unfastened his wristwatch and placed it in front of him on the desk. The time was 10:58 p.m. Karras read, first Freud, then McCaslin, parts of Satan, parts of Osterreich's exhaustive study, and at a little after 4 a.m., he had finished reading and was rubbing at his face and at his eyes. They were smarting, and smoke was hanging thick in the air, while the ashtray on Karras's desk was mounded high with ashes and the twisted butts of cigarettes. He stood up and walked wearily to a window, slid it open, gulped in the coolness of moist early morning air, and then stood there thinking about Reagan. Yes, she had the physical syndrome of possession. About that he had no doubt. In case after case, irrespective of geography or period of history, the symptoms of possession were substantially a constant. Some of them Reagan had not evidenced as yet. Stigmata, or the desire for repugnant foods, or insensitivity to pain, as well as frequently loud and irrepressible hiccuping. But some others she had clearly manifested. The involuntary motor excitement, foul breath, furred tongue, the wasting away of the bodily frame, the distended stomach, the irritations of the skin and mucous membrane, and most significantly present were the basic symptoms of the hard core of cases that Osterreich has characterized as genuine possession. The striking change in the voice and in the features, plus the manifestation of a new personality. Through the window, Kara stared darkly up the street. Through the branches of trees, he could see the McNeil house and the large bay window of Reagan's bedroom. From his readings, he had learned that when possession was voluntary, as with mediums, the new personality was often benign. Like Tia, Karras brooded. The spirit of a woman who possessed a man, a sculptor, intermittently and for only an hour or so at a time, until a friend of the sculptor fell desperately in love with Tia and pleaded with the sculptor to permit her to permanently remain in possession of his body. But in Reagan there's no Tia, the priest reflected grimly, for the seemingly invading personality was malevolent and typical of cases of demonic possession, where the new personality sought the destruction of the body of its host and frequently achieved it. Moodily, the Jesuit walked back to his desk, picked up a package of cigarettes and lit one. So, okay, she's got the physical syndrome of possession, he thought. Now, how do you cure it? He fanned out the match. Well, that depends on what caused it. He sat on the edge of his desk and reflected on the case of the nuns at the convent of Lille in early 17th century France. Allegedly possessed, they had confessed to their exorcists that while helpless in the state of possession, they had regularly attended satanic orgies at which they had varied their erotic fare. Mondays and Tuesdays, heterosexual copulation. Thursdays, sodomy, fellatio, and cunnilingus with homosexual partners. Saturday, bestiality with domestic animals and dragons. And dragons? The Jesuit ruefully shook his head. As with Lille, he thought the causes of many possessions, perhaps most, were a mixture of fraud and mythomania, with still others caused by mental illness, paranoia, schizophrenia, neurasthenia, psychasthenia. And this was the reason, he knew, that the church had for years recommended that the exorcist work with a psychiatrist or neurologist present during the rite. Yet not every possession had a cause so clear. Many had led Osterreich to characterize possession as a separate disorder all its own, to dismiss the explanatory split personality label of psychiatry as no more than an equally occult substitution for the concepts demon and spirit of the dead. Karras rubbed the side of an index finger in the crease beside his nose. The indications from Barringer, Chris had told him, were that Reagan's disorder might be caused by suggestion, by something that was somehow related to hysteria. And Karras thought it likely so. He believed the majority of the cases he had studied had been caused by precisely these two factors. For one thing, it mostly hits women. For another, all those outbreaks of possession epidemics. And then those exorcists. Karras frowned. The exorcists themselves at times became the victims of possession, as had happened in 1634 at the Ursuline Convent of Nuns at Loudun, France. Of the four Jesuit exorcists sent there to deal with an epidemic of possession, three, Fathers Lucas, Lactance, and Tranquille, not only became seemingly possessed, but died soon after of apparent cardiac arrest caused by unrelenting hyper-psychomotor activity. The constant cursing and the bellowing in rage, the unceasing fits of thrashing about in their beds. While the fourth, Père Serin, who at the time of the possession was 33 years of age and one of Europe's foremost intellectuals, became insane and was sequestered in a mental institution for the subsequent 25 years of his life. Karras brutally nodded. If Reagan's disorder was rooted in hysteria and the onset of the symptoms of possession was the product of suggestion, then the only likely source of the suggestion was the chapter on possession in the witchcraft book. He pored over its pages. Had Reagan read it? Were there striking similarities between any of its details and Reagan's behavior? He found some correlations. The case of an 8-year-old girl who was described in the chapter as bellowing like a bull in a thunderous, deep bass voice. Reagan lowing like a steer. The case of Helene Smith, who'd been treated by the great psychologist Flournoy. His description of the changing of her voice and her features with lightning rapidity into those of a variety of personalities. She did that with me, the personality who spoke with a British accent. Quick change, instantaneous. A case in South Africa, reported firsthand by the noted ethnologist, you know. His description of a woman who'd vanished from her dwelling one night, to be found on the following morning, tied to the top of a very tall tree by fine lianas, and then afterward gliding down the tree head down, while hissing and rapidly flicking her tongue in and out like a snake. She hung there, suspended for a time, and proceeded to speak in a language that no one had ever heard. Reagan gliding like a snake when she was following Sharon. The gibberish, an attempt at an unknown language? The case of Joseph and Theobald Berner, aged 8 and 10. A description of them lying on their backs and suddenly whirling like tops with the utmost rapidity. Sounds either totally made up or greatly exaggerated, but pretty close to Reagan whirling like a dervish. There were other similarities, still other reasons for suspecting suggestion. A mention of abnormal strength and obscenity of speech, plus the accounts of possession in the Gospels, which perhaps were the basis, speculated Karras, of the curiously religious content of Reagan's ravings at the Barringer Clinic. Moreover, in the chapter there was mention of the onset of possession in stages. The first infestation consists of an attack through the victim's surroundings, noises, odors, the displacement of objects without visible cause, and the second, obsession, is a personal attack on the subject designed to instill terror through the kind of injury that a person might inflict on another through blows and kicks. The rappings, the flingings, the attacks by Captain Howdy. All right, maybe. Maybe she read it, Karras thought. But he wasn't convinced. No. No, not at all. And even Chris, she had seemed so uncertain about it. Karras walked to the window again. What's the answer, then? Genuine possession? A demon? He looked down and shook his head. Oh, come on, no way. But paranormal happenings? Sure, why not? Too many competent observers had reported them. Doctors, psychiatrists, men like you know. But the problem is, how do you interpret the phenomena? Karras thought back to Osterreich's mention of a shaman of the Altai in Siberia, who had deliberately invited possession as a means of performing a magical act. Examined in a clinic just prior to performing the act of levitation, His pulse rate had spurted to 100, and then afterward leaped to an amazing 200, while there were also marked changes in his bodily temperature and respiration. So his paranormal action was tied to physiology. It was caused by some bodily energy or force. But as proof of possession, Karras had learned, the church wanted clear and exterior, verifiable phenomena that suggested... He'd forgotten the wording. But tracing a finger down the page of the Satan book lying on his desk, Karras found it. Verifiable exterior phenomena which suggest the idea that they are due to the extraordinary intervention of an intelligent cause other than man. Was that the case with the shaman? No. No, not necessarily. And what of Reagan? Is that the case with her? Karras turned to a passage he had bracketed in pencil in his copy of the Roman ritual. The exorcist will simply be careful that none of the patient's manifestations are left unaccounted for. Karras thoughtfully nodded. Okay, then. Let's see. Pacing, he ran through the manifestations of Reagan's disorder, along with their possible explanations. He ticked them off mentally, one by one. The startling change in Reagan's features. Well, partly her illness and partly undernourishment, although mostly, he concluded, it was due to physiognomy being an expression of one's psychic constitution. The startling change in Reagan's voice. He had yet to hear her real voice, Karras thought. And even if that had been liked, as reported by her mother, constant shrieking would thicken the vocal cords with a consequent deepening of the voice. The only problem here being the unexplained booming volume of that voice. For even with a thickening of the cords, this would seem to be physiologically impossible. And yet, Karras considered, in states of anxiety or pathology, displays of paranormal strength in excess of muscular potential were known to be a commonplace. Might not vocal cords and voice box be subject to the same mysterious effect? Reagan suddenly extended vocabulary and knowledge. Cryptomnesia. Buried recollections of words and data she had once been exposed to, even in infancy, perhaps. In somnambulists, and frequently in people at the point of death, the buried data often came to the surface with almost photographic fidelity. Reagan's recognition of him as a priest. A good guess. If she had read the chapter on possession, she might have expected a visit by a priest. And according to Jung, the unconscious awareness and sensitivity of hysterical patients could sometimes be 50 times greater than normal, which Jung thought accounted for seemingly authentic thought reading, be it table tapping by mediums. For what the medium's unconscious was actually reading were the tremors and vibrations created in the table by the hands of the person whose thoughts were supposedly being read. The tremors formed a pattern of letters or numbers. Thus, Reagan might conceivably have read his identity merely from his manner, or even from the scent of holy oils on his hands. Reagan's knowledge of the death of his mother. Another good guess. He was 46.
Could you help an old altar boy, Father?
Textbooks used in Catholic seminaries accepted telepathy as both a reality and a natural phenomenon. Reagan's precocity of intellect. This was by far the most difficult of all to explain. But in the course of personally observing a case of multiple personality involving alleged occult phenomena, the psychiatrist Jung had concluded that in states of hysterical somnambulism, not only were unconscious perceptions of the senses heightened, but also the functioning of the intellect. For the new personality in the case in question seemed clearly more intelligent than the first. And yet did merely reporting the phenomenon explain it? Karras abruptly stopped pacing and hovered by his desk, brought up short, as it suddenly dawned upon him that Reagan's pun on Herod was even more complicated than at first it had appeared. For when the Pharisees told Christ of Herod's threats, the Jesuit recalled, Christ had answered, "Go and tell that fox that I cast out devils." Karras glanced at the tape of Reagan's voice, and then wearily sat down at the desk, where he lit another cigarette and blew out a ragged cone of bluish-gray smoke, as he thought once again of the Burner Boys, and of the case of the 8-year-old girl who had manifested symptoms of full-blown possession. What book had this girl read that had enabled her unconscious mind to simulate the symptoms of possession to such perfection? And how did the unconscious of victims in China communicate the symptoms to the various unconscious minds of people possessed in Siberia, in Germany, in Africa, and everywhere else in every culture and period of time, so that the symptoms were always the same? "Incidentally, your mother is in here with us, Karras." The Jesuit was staring straight ahead, unseeing. Wisps of smoke from the cigarette held between his fingers wafting up into life, and then instant death like mistaken recognitions and one's memory of dreams. He looked down at the left-hand bottom drawer of his desk, holding silent and still for several moments, before at last leaning over, pulling open the drawer, and extracting a faded English language exercise book for an adult education course. His mother's. He set it on the desk, waited, and then thumbed through the pages with a tender care. At first letters of the alphabet over and over, then simple exercises. Lesson 6, my complete address. Between the pages an attempt at a letter. "Dear Dimmy, I have been waiting." Then another beginning. Incomplete. He looked away. Saw her eyes at the window. Waiting. Domine non sum dignus. The eyes became Reagan's. "Speak but the word." Karras glanced again at the tape of Reagan's voice. He left the room and took the tape to a campus language lab, found a tape recorder and sat down, carefully threaded the tape to an empty reel, clamped on earphones, turned the switch to the on position, and then, exhausted and intense, he leaned forward and listened. For a time, only tape hiss, squeaking of the mechanism. Suddenly a thumping sound of activation, noises.
"Hello?"
Then a whining feedback. Chris McNeil, her tone hushed in the background. "Not so close to the microphone, honey. Hold it back."
"Like this?"
"No, no more."
"Like this?"
"Yeah, yeah, go ahead, honey. Go ahead now, just talk." The microphone bumping a table. Then the sweet, clear voice of Reagan McNeil.
"Hello, Daddy. This is me, Mom, I can't tell what to say."
"Oh, just tell him how you are, honey. Tell him about all of the things you've been doing."
Daddy, well, you see, I mean, I hope you can hear me okay. And, well, now, let's see. Well, first we're... No, wait, see. First we're in Washington. It's where the president lives. And this house. You know, Daddy, it's... Darn, Daddy, wait now. I better start over. See, Daddy, there's..."
Karras heard the rest only dimly, and as if from afar, and through the roaring of blood in his ears, as through his being there swelled an overwhelming intuition. The thing that I saw in that room wasn't Reagan. Karras returned to the Jesuit residence hall, where he found an unoccupied cubicle and said his mass before the early morning rush. As he lifted the host in consecration, it trembled in his fingers with a hope that he dared not hope, that he fought with every particle and fiber of his will. "For this is my body," he intoned with a whispered intensity. "No, it's bread. It's nothing but bread." He dared not love again and lose. That loss was too great, that pain too keen. The cause of his skepticism and his doubts, his attempts to eliminate natural causes in the case of Reagan's seeming possession, was the fiery intensity of his yearning to be able to believe. He bowed his head and placed the consecrated host in his mouth, where in a moment it would stick in the dryness of his throat and of his faith. After Mass, he skipped breakfast, making notes for his lecture, then met with his class at the Georgetown University Medical School, where he managed to thread hoarsely through the ill-prepared lecture. And in considering the symptoms of manic mood disorders, you'll...
Daddy, this is me. This is me.
But who was me? Karras dismissed the class early and returned to his room, where he immediately sat at his desk and intently re-examined the church's position on the paranormal signs of demonic possession. Was I being too hard-nosed? He wondered. He scrutinized the high points in Satan. Telepathy, natural phenomenon, even telekinesis, the moving of objects from a distance, our forefathers, science. Nowadays we must be more cautious, the seeming paranormal evidence notwithstanding. As he came to what followed, Karras slowed down the pace of his reading. All conversations held with the patient must be carefully analyzed, for if they present the same system of association of ideas and of logico-grammatical habits that he exhibits in his normal state, the possession must then be held suspect. Karras gently shook his head. No, doesn't cut it. He glanced to the plate on the facing page. A demon. His gaze flicked down idly to the caption. Pazuzu. Karras shut his eyes and envisioned the death of the exorcist, Father Tranquille. The final agonies, the bellowing and the hissing and the vomiting, the hurlings to the ground from his bed by his demons, who were furious because soon he would be dead and beyond their torment. And then Lucas, my God, Father Lucas. Lucas kneeling at the dying Tranquille's bedside, praying, and at the moment of his death, Lucas instantly assuming the identity of Tranquille's demons and viciously kicking at the still warm corpse, at the shattered, clawed body, strongly reeking of excrement and vomit, while four strong men were attempting to restrain him, for he did not stop, it was reported, until the corpse had been carried from the room. Could it be, wondered Karras, could the only hope for Reagan be the ritual of exorcism? Must he open up that locker of aches? He could not shake it or leave it untested. He must know. And yet how? Karras opened his eyes. Conversations with the patient must be carefully... Yes. Yes, yes, why not? If discovery that Reagan's speech patterns and that of the demon turned out to be markedly different, that would leave possession open as a possibility. Whereas if the patterns were the same, it would have to be ruled out. Karras stood up and paced the room. What else, what else, he was thinking. Something, quick. Wait a minute. Karras stopped in his tracks, staring down in thought. That chapter in the book on witchcraft. Had it mentioned? Yeah. Yeah, it had. It had stated that demons invariably reacted with fury when confronted with a consecrated host, or with holy relics, or even... Karras lifted his head and stared ahead with a sudden realization. And with holy water. Right. That could nail it one way or the other. He feverishly rummaged through his black valise. He was looking for a holy water vial. Willie admitted him to the house, and in the entry he glanced up toward Reagan's bedroom. Shouts, obscenities. And yet not in the deep, coarse voice of the demon. Much lighter, raspy, broad British. Yes, it was the manifestation that had fleetingly appeared when Karras had last seen Reagan. Karras looked at a waiting Willie. She was staring in puzzlement at the round Roman collar, at the priestly robes. Where's Mrs. McNeil, please? Willie motioned him upstairs. Thank you. Karras moved to the staircase, climbed, saw Chris in the hall. She was sitting in a chair near Reagan's bedroom, head lowered, her arms folded across her chest. As the Jesuit approached, she heard the swishing of his robes, turned and saw him, and quickly stood up. Hello, Father. Karras frowned. There were bluish sacks beneath her eyes. Did you sleep? He asked with concern. Oh, yeah, a little. Karras shook his head in admonishment. Chris. Well, I couldn't, Chris told him, motioning with her head at the door to Reagan's bedroom. She's been doing that all night. Any vomiting? No. Chris took hold of the sleeve of his cassock as if to lead him away. Come on, Father, let's go downstairs where we can... No, I'd like to see you. Right now? Something's wrong here, Karras reflected. Chris looked tense, afraid. Why not, he asked. Chris glanced furtively at Reagan's bedroom door. From within shrieked the hoarse, mad British voice.
Damn Nazi bastard!
Chris looked down and aside. Go ahead, she said softly. Go on in. Have you got a tape recorder here in the house, Chris? You know, a little one, portable? Asked Karras. Chris looked up. Yeah, we do, Father. Why? Could you have it brought up to the room with a blank reel of tape, please? Abruptly, Chris frowned with incipient alarm. What for? Hey, wait a minute now. You mean you want a tape, Reagan? Well, it's important. No way, Father. No, absolutely not. Look, I need to make comparisons of patterns of speech, Karras said to her earnestly. It could prove to the church authorities that your daughter is really possessed. They both turned to the suddenly loud sound of an excoriating stream of obscenities directed at Carl as the houseman opened Reagan's bedroom door and emerged with a laundry sack filled with soiled diapers and bedding. His face ashen, closed the door behind him, muting the continuing tirade. Get a fresh one on for her, Carl? Chris asked. The manservant's fearful glance went from Karras, then to Chris. They are on, he said tersely. He turned and walked quickly down the hallway to the staircase. Chris listened to his thumping, quick steps going down. And when the sounds had dwindled into silence, she turned to Karras, and with her shoulders slumping, looking downcast, she said quietly and submissively, Okay, Father, I'll have it sent up. And abruptly she was hurrying away down the hall. Karras watched her. What was she hiding, he wondered. Something. Then noticing the sudden silence within, he moved to the bedroom door, opened it, entered, closed the door behind him quietly, and turned front and stared. at the horror, at the emaciated, skeletal thing on the bed that was watching intently with mocking eyes that were filled with cunning and with hate and, most unsettling of all, with a posture of towering authority. Karras moved slowly to the foot of the bed, where he stopped and then listened to the quiet rumbling of diuretic voiding into plastic pants.
"Why, hello, Karras," Reagan greeted him cordially.
"Hello," the priest answered calmly. "Tell me, how are you feeling?"
"At the moment, very happy to see you." "Yes, very glad."
And now a long, furred tongue lolled out of her mouth, while the eyes appraised Karras with naked insolence.
"Flying your colors, I see."
"Oh, very good." Another rumbling.
"You don't mind a bit of stink, do you, Karras?"
"No, not at all."
"What a liar."
"Does lying bother you?"
"Mildly. But the devil likes liars." "Only good ones, my dear Karras. Only good ones. Moreover, who told you I'm the devil?"
"Well, didn't you?"
"Ah, well, I might have, I might. I'm
not well. By the way, did you believe me?"
"Oh, I did." "Oh, then my apologies, in case I misled you. In fact, I'm just a poor, struggling demon. A devil. A subtle distinction, but one not entirely lost upon our father in hell. Nasty term, that, hell. I've been mentioning we ought to think of changing it to the Scottish dimension, but he never seems to listen. You won't mention my slip of the tongue to him, Karras, now will you? Huh? When you see him?"
"See him? Is he here?"
"In the piglet. Oh, no. No such luck.
No.
We're just a poor little family of wandering souls. By the way, you don't blame us for being here, do you? After all, we have no place to go. No home."
"And how long are you planning to stay?" Face contorted in sudden rage, Reagan jerked up from the pillow as she shouted in fury,
"Until the piglet dies!"
And then as suddenly she settled back onto her pillows with a thick-lipped, drooling grin, saying,
"Incidentally, what an excellent day for an exorcism." "The book," thought Karras. "She must have read that in the book." The sardonic eyes were staring piercingly. "Oh, do we get it soon, Karras, would you?" "Very soon."
"You would like that?"
"Oh, intensely."
"But wouldn't that drive you out of Reagan?"
"It would bring us together."
"You and Reagan?"
"You and us, my dear morsel. You and us." Karras stared. At the back of his neck, he felt hands icy cold and lightly touching, and abruptly they were gone.
"Caused by fear?" wondered Karras.
"Fear of what?" "Yes, you'll join our little family," Reagan continued. "You see, the trouble with signs in the sky is that once having seen them, one has no excuse. Have you noticed how few miracles one hears about lately?" "Not our fault, dear Karras. We try." Karras jerked around his head at a sudden loud banging sound.
A bureau drawer had popped open, sliding out its entire length, and the priest felt a quick rising thrill as he watched it abruptly bang shut.
"There it is. A verifiable paranormal event."
And then as suddenly, the emotion dropped away like a rotted chunk of bark from an ancient tree, as the priest remembered psychokinesis and its various natural explanations. Hearing a low, sustained chuckling, He turned back to Reagan.
She was grinning. How pleasant to chat with you, Karis, she told him in that guttural voice. I feel free. Like a wanton, I spread my great wings. In fact, even my telling you this will serve only to increase your damnation, my doctor, my dear and inglorious physician.
You did that? You made the dresser drawer move just now?
The creature called Reagan wasn't listening. It had glanced toward the door, to the sound of someone rapidly approaching down the hall, and now its features turned to those of the other personality that had once before appeared.
Damn butchering bastard!
It shrieked in that hoarse, British-accented voice.
Cunting hun!
Through the door came Carl, moving swiftly with the tape recorder. Eyes averted from the bed, he handed it to Karis, and then, ashen-faced, rapidly retreated from the room.
Out, Hibbler! Out of my sight! Go and visit your club-footed daughter! Bring her sauerkraut. Yes, sauerkraut and heroin, Thorndyke! She'll love it! Ha ha!
Carl had slammed the door shut behind him, and now abruptly the thing within Reagan turned cordial.
Oh, yes, hello, hello, hello. What's up? It said cheerily as it watched Karis setting down the tape recorder on a small round end table next to the bed. Are we going to record something, Padre? I'll have fun. Oh, I do love to play act, you know. Oh, yes, immensely.
Oh, good, responded Karis, pushing down on the tape recorder's red record button with his index finger, causing a tiny red light to come on. I'm Damien Karis, by the way, and who are you?
Are you asking for my credits now, ducks? Said with a giggle. Oh, well, I did play Puck of the junior class play.
Glanced around.
There's a drink, incidentally. I'm parched.
If you tell me your name, I'll try to find you a drink.
Oh, yes, of course, it said, giggling again.
And then drink it all yourself, I suppose.
Why not tell me your name? Karis asked.
Fucking plunderer.
With this, the British-accented identity vanished and was instantly replaced by the demonic Reagan.
Oh, and so what are we doing now, Karis?
Oh, I see. We're recording.
How quaint.
Karis pulled up a chair beside the bed and sat down. Do you mind? Karis said.
Oh, not at all. Read your Milton, and you'll see that I like infernal engines. They block out all those damned silly messages from him.
Who is him? The creature loudly broke wind.
There's your answer.
Abruptly, a powerful stench assailed Karis. It was an odor like
sauerkraut, Karis? Have you noticed? It does smell like sauerkraut. The Jesuit marveled.
It seemed to be coming from the bed, from Reagan's body. And then it was gone, replaced by the putrid stench of before.
Karis frowned. Did I imagine it? Auto-suggestion. Who's the person I was speaking to before? Karis asked. Oh, merely one of the family.
A demon?
You give far too much credit. The word demon means wise one. He is stupid.
The Jesuit grew tautly alert. Oh, really? In what language does demon mean wise one, he asked.
Why, in Greek, Karis.
You speak Greek?
Very fluently.
One of the signs, Karis thought with excitement. Speaking in an unknown tongue. It was more than he'd hoped for. Posegnokas, hoti piespiteros aimi?
He asked in classical Greek. I'm not in the mood now, Karis.
Oh, I see. Then you really
I said,
I am not in the mood.
Karis looked aside, then back, and asked amiably,
Was that you who made the drawer come sliding out? Oh, most assuredly.
Karis nodded. Most impressive. You must be a very, very powerful demon.
Oh, I am, my dear morsel. I am. Incidentally, do you like it that at times I sound exactly like my older brother's Screwtape? A burst of high-pitched guffaws and raucous laughter.
Karis waited for it to subside. Yes, yes, I do find that interesting, Karis said. But in the meantime, the drawer trick?
What about it?
It's incredible. I was wondering if you'd do it again.
In time.
Well, why not now?
Why, we must give you some reason for doubt. Yes, just enough to assure the final outcome. How novel to attack through the truth. Yes, yes, surprised by joy indeed.
Karis stared, icy fingers once again touching lightly at the back of his neck.
Why the fear again, he wondered. Why?
Hideously grinning, Reagan said, because of me. Karis stared, feeling wonder again, and then promptly he chipped it down.
In this state, she just might be telepathic.
Can you tell me what I'm thinking now, devil?
My dear Karis, your thoughts are too dull to entertain.
Oh, okay. Then you can't read my mind. Is that what you're saying? Reagan looked away, her hand pinching distractedly at her bedsheet, idly lifting and then lowering a tiny linen cone.
You may have it as you wish. She then said dully, as you wish.
Then silence. Karis listened to the squeaking of the tape recorder mechanism, Reagan's fluttery and whistling, heavy breathing. Thinking he needed more of a sampling of her speech in this state, he leaned forward, hunching over, as if with keen interest.
You know, you're such a fascinating person, he said. Reagan turned to him, sneering. You mock.
Oh, no, really. I'd love to know more about your background. You never told me who you are, for example.
Are you deaf? I have told you. I am a devil.
Yes, I know. But which devil? What's your name?
Now, what's in a name, Karis? Really? All right.
Call me Howdy, if that makes you more comfortable.
Ah, I see. You're Captain Howdy, Reagan's friend. A very close friend, Karis.
Really? But then why do you torment her?
Because I am her friend. The piglet likes it.
That doesn't make any sense, Captain Howdy. Why on earth would Reagan like to be tormented?
Ask her!
Would you allow her to answer?
I would not.
Well, then what would be the point in my asking?
None.
The eyes glinted with mockery and spite. Who's the person I was speaking to earlier? Asked Karis.
Oh, come on, you've asked me that before.
Yes, I know, but you never give an answer.
Just another good friend of the sweet honey piglet.
May I speak to this